This is Rack Addicts After Hours.
Welcome, welcome, and again, welcome, noble viewers. You're not viewing anything, you're hearing with your audio flaps. Welcome, anyway, to a music and technology podcast, more specifically, episode 142 of Rack Addicts After Hours. You're listening to Ben. Hello. Pete's here as well. What have you been doing this week?
Well, this week I've been a bit of a busy beaver, to be honest. Leading on from last week and my seeking your advice on film or negative scanning.
Indeed.
I've gone deep.
Uh-oh. What's the damage?
No funds have left my possession so far, but I'm ready to strike.
Okay.
But I got in really deep into all the variants and so forth. So I'm now au fait with flatbed scanning of negatives and drum scanning of negatives.
Ah, you know what a drum scanner is? Cool, because I have no idea.
And also some of these other scanners where you can feed
the sort of side loady.
Yes.
So what is a drum scanner? Because I've heard the thing. What is it?
Well, it seems to be a scanner that can either do negatives and slides simultaneously of all sizes.
Right.
And then it's sort of adhered to a kind of, I would imagine it's a sort of a Perspex drum.
Mm.
There's layers of transparent mylar and they use fluids and they kind of stick it. It uses kind of capillary action type of adhesion to stick the negatives or the transparencies down, and then they seal them onto the drum, and then the drum is put into a device where it's rotating as it scans. So instead of, you know, how you'd scan in a photocopy, you've got a spinning drum and the paper sort of passes it and gets charged. It's sort of similar to that, but the opposite. The thing that you're scanning is rotating very fast.
Strange, and I do wonder how on earth somebody thought that up, but there we go.
But these are the cream of the cream. And they're very expensive.
Yeah, the kind of thing that the labs will have.
Yeah,
they?
Very specialised. There are a few, I don't know if they're professionals or enthusiastic amateurs on YouTube who actually have their own drum scanners.
That hashtag YouTube money.
Yes. And then the flatbed is relatively self-explanatory, and there's various flatbeds that are preferred over others. You know, obviously, very high resolution ones.
Indeed.
And then there's the type that you pointed out, which was particularly the Plustek 8100.
Yeah.
But I've come to the conclusion the one to get is actually the Plustek 8200.
Aha.
Because it's got one of these, I think it's an IR sensor, but basically it can automatically remove all the blemishes from dust and scratches.
That's handy.
As it's processing and dumping the data into your computer, it's actually correcting all those little problems with the negatives.
Super useful, removing a whole step.
Yes, because apparently otherwise it's a very laborious
task. I was talking to my dad about it. He has the techniques on Photoshop. I think it's kind of using like the clone tool and stuff to do it manually, but not having to do it at all sounds good.
Yeah, I've done some major picture restoration, let's say, using the clone tool, and it works, but it's pretty slow and gruesome work. Something that can do it automatically. So I'm thinking I'm going to possibly purchase the 8200, the Plustek 8200, and utilize it. I've got at least 200 negatives.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, and then see anyone else that wants anything done. And then as soon as I've finished and everyone else is finished, I'll sell it.
Well, I might buy it off you.
Fair enough.
We'll see. Oh, yeah. Have you got one of those squeezy air nozzle things?
Yeah, I believe I've got
for your cameras or something.
Yeah, I've got at least one that's just a squeezy one and one with a little soft brush at the end. So that was the deep dive that I got into the scanning world or the film negative scanning world. Other than that, I've also been noodling away on the UDO Super 6. It's now connected to the Autobam.
Feedback on both then, please.
Definitely a match made in heaven.
Okay, cool.
As I say, with the Super 6, there is no actual reverb. It's got a delay, it's got chorus, but no reverb. So it really was the one element I wanted to add to it. Although some of the sounds are really solid and stand up without any reverb.
Yeah.
But there are those ones where you want to wash it out a bit and things. So yes, two really high quality pieces of kit, and I'm really loving it. Again, I'm sort of savouring it like a fine wine.
Can I task you with delivering us a quick sample for next week or the week after, perhaps?
Yes, I'm sure I can curry something up very quickly.
Lovely stuff.
And then final note, I actually received something that I had ordered last week, which was an air fryer, which seems to be seems to be all the rage in the UK at the moment.
Appliance du jour.
And as everybody is trying to save as much power as they possibly can as we head into this winter of hopefully not power cuts, but
yeah.
So allegedly, according to the documentation that came with my unit, it is 80% efficient over using a conventional oven.
Savings.
Yes, hopefully. So I'm going to be experimenting with all sorts of comestibles and see what I can cook in there, because it's a whole new experience.
Quite convenient as well, and yeah, good for crisping. Do you like crispy bits?
Yes, lots of chips, lots of healthy chips with no fat on them. Anyway, that's been my week of various fettlings.
Wonderful. Well, I only have two small updates for you. One is a squashy one. There's the club tournament on at the moment, and I have succeeded in my only goal of not losing in the first round. But alas, there was a sacrifice to be made. My right buttock is now out of action. And I've got the next round tomorrow evening, so I've done my best to not use it at all somehow.
So have you torn something?
No, this seems to happen every time I play in anger, not in anger, but you know, really, really get going. On away matches, because I tend to drive there or catch a lift, I don't have the usual cycle up the hill to warm me up. So the theory was that I wasn't warming up properly, and I kept, you know, tweaking a hamstring there, pulling a quad there, and it would never be that bad, like not a tear, but it would be enough to either seriously hamper the movement or make me hop around the court for the rest of the match, which is no good. So the same almost happened here. It was right at the end, and I managed to pull through. But this time, I had cycled up the hill, so I was warm, but it's I don't know what to do.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Is it always the same buttock?
No, it's always a completely different muscle every single time.
Okay, so it's muscle related.
Yeah, so what have I done? Left calf, right quad, right hamstring, right buttock, which does suggest, and it's probably true, that I favour my right leg in a lunge, because I'm a right-legged person, and my movement is definitely not optimal. But yes. So the gentleman I played was... there's no chance he'll be listening to this podcast. Maybe 60. I don't know. I'm really bad at judging ages. And as I turned up to the court, he was intimidating in an interesting way. How much do you know about yoga and the poses? You did some Pilates a while ago,
yeah,
didn't you?
But I'm very little about yoga as such. You know, I know about sort of some of the basic positions, but...
I'm not going to demonstrate, partly because I can't do the thing and it would probably damage my tender buttock, but he was doing the pigeon pose. Do you know the pigeon pose?
No, not at all.
Cool. I'm going to have to describe it to my listeners who also don't partake in yoga, because it's the only one I know, because it was prescribed for my terrible hamstrings. Imagine, if you will, sitting cross-legged on the floor. Now, take your left leg and stretch your foot out and your leg behind you so that the top of your thigh, your knee and your shin are kind of against the floor. So it's sticking out behind you, and your other leg, fully bent knee, acute angle at the knee, your other foot will be somewhere in front of your hips. If you're really flexible, you can probably sit like that. There'll be just with your body upright, you'll probably have a good stretch in the left hip flexor and your right hamstring, glutes and such. If you're obscenely flexible, the way to really go for this stretch is to lean forwards. And when I turned up at the court, this guy had his chest flat on the floor. And as somebody with completely immobile hamstrings, I was terrified, but I was victorious with the sacrificed buttock. Anyway, there's my squashing woes. I'll update you as to what happens tomorrow evening. I do know the player. I've seen him play before, and he is rather handy. Maybe not as accurate sometimes. So it's either going to be a fitness fest and see who just kicks the bucket first, or I'll just be hopelessly outgunned. But we'll see. We shall see. The other part of my week, I was browsing the Lines forum, and there's a thread that I follow there called the Old Things Hype Mega Thread, which I think would be kind of up your street as well, Pete. apart from old synths that have just been around forever and the person's been using it and loving it and just it's a faithful companion, it's also got other physical objects of timeless design and endless utility. But somebody posted an old Yamaha, I'd call it a keyboard, I think. It's not a synthesizer. I mean, technically, yes, it's a synthesizer, but if I say synthesizer, I kind of feel like it should be a bit more of a serious instrument. No, but this was part of the PSS series, which I think is the really cheap, affordable stuff, late 80s, with all the kind of FM situation after, you know, the DX7, all that kind of stuff. So they were accessible, affordable, often small keys, speakers, lots of sounds, just a bunch of buttons, make noises, fun, almost kind of a toy type situation. And I had a weird sort of visceral flashback memory situation happen because of, you know, that really specific tealish green shade of the buttons on some of those Yamaha FM machines?
Yes.
In this picture that the person posted, I saw that and was transported back to Bedford. Where is Bedford? Where I grew up. And maybe about five or six, we had my granddad's old keyboard. And I realized it was a Yamaha because of that shade of tealish greenish. So I went on a mission to try and figure out what on earth it was. Only going on memory, probably got it wrong. I'm going to have to convene with the Father Man to see if we can delve into the photographic archives and hopefully see it in the background of some family photo from ages ago. My best guess, after trawling through the Wikipedia entry of every thing the Yamaha Corporation has ever made, I think it's the Yamaha PSS-170. I will try and verify this, but they're going for about 15 quid on eBay, so I might pick one up. But let me get you a proper picture so you can have a look at the glorious machine. Feast your eyes.
Yes, okay.
You know, the kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very DX7-y, isn't it?
Yeah, so my very fuzzy memory of this includes the slidey, switchy, fadery things on the left. There's four of them. One is a power, I think one's volume, I'm not sure what the rest do, but I do remember the printed list of sounds along the top, again in that wondrous tealish thing. And you kind of punch in a number and it calls up a sound. So this is two operator FM on an old Yamaha YM2413 chip. But of course, super cheap, plug it into some effects, it might be quite fun. Sound list, you've got piano 1, piano 2, honky tonk piano, electric piano 1 and 2, and those will probably be quite lo-fi and kind of fun. So assuming I can verify which one it was, might be quite cool. I think you might have some level of control on the thing as well. It does have rhythms, which I remember. Oh yeah, and I remember it eating chunky batteries as well. And this used 6 C cells by the seashore. Not that I remember, but it was either C or D from memory. Okay, I just found on Google a website called YamahaBlackBoxes.com, which appears to be kind of, you know, a list of all of their machines, that kind of thing. But there's a PDF, Yamaha Keyboards, the Porter Sound sort of catalogue, which is gloriously 80s. Didn't you bring in some manuals once, or brochures, from about the time you might have picked up, like, your Juno or something, when Telmo was on the podcast a while ago?
We went through a whole load of brochures,
yeah,
for various products.
Very much that vibe. Let me find a good example of the glorious 80s-ness. This one is in German, so I don't know what any of it says, but...
Yeah, it's got the look, hasn't it?
It does. Wonderful. I will update you, audience, on if I can certify the model number, and if I get one, because at 15 odd quid, I mean, to use your phrase, Pete, it would be rude not to.
Surely these are the predecessors to the PSRE range.
Most likely, yeah, and having the unfortunate experience of using the PSRE, where did they go wrong? They're so much worse now.
I mean, they seem to be very popular because they're very affordable. Certainly the low-end ones are very affordable.
True.
And it's often the solution, because many people come in the shop and they say, I'd like to buy a keyboard. Normally it's for a child or a present for someone. And then you say, well, what's your budget? And they tell you, and you go, I'm not sure if we got anything then. But invariably there's a Yamaha PSRE that ticks a box for them.
I don't miss that. Right, Synthy Mosizor news. There are a few of them. Let me quickly organise my tabs into some sections. Okie dokie. Eurorack modules aplenty. This is quite a cool one from long-time favourite company of mine, those wonderful people at Bifaco. They have a new VCO, which is only 4 HP, which is pretty cool, but they've also got it in a 1U format with quite a few more HP, of course, because it's gone horizontal. But it's kind of no nonsense and pretty cool. Let me tell you the stuffs. It is a through zero oscillator, which I believe is good for your frequency modulation for reasons I don't understand, never really having got into my analog FM stuff. You've got a wave folding circuit, which is awesome. PWM, when you're using your square wave instead of wave folding, of course, because if you wave fold a square, nothing really happens. I think it just gets quieter. Anyway, you've got sync. Is there a VCA in this? What? I didn't even notice that the first time. Yeah, it's got a VCA at the end. That's really cool. Love that. You also have an LFO switch and a nice clicky octave selector, which does 7 octaves of range, which is cool, and you're fine. It only has one tune control, just a single pot, which could be a little tricky. I'm not sure what the range is on that one, but it's super cool. You know, 4 HP, that's good stuff. DIY kit, because that's how we roll when it's Bifaco. 181.50 euros. Hang on, that looks pre-soldered. What are they pre-soldering on here? Ah, it's so small because there's got to be some surface mount boyos in there. Yeah, I wonder if they'll stick that on Thonk with a more DIY DIY. Let's go and check it out. No news yet. Must be a direct from Bifaco for now. It may well be super tiny package sizes and they just want to keep it in-house. I guess because they still have their, what they call it, the happy ending service for sending them broken modules and such. If they started selling really small surface mount type modules, they might cause themselves a bit of an overload of tricky work.
Yes, I'm still thinking I might opt for their service.
With your hex mix?
Yes.
Wait, was it just the expander?
No, it was just one channel. It was channel 3 on the hex mix.
Yeah.
And they emailed me some pointers and I do need to get stuck into it and have another go, but I couldn't find anything. I changed, because I'd mounted all the chips on risers, I could change all the op amps and everything out and nothing changed. That didn't seem to work. They seem to suggest there wasn't a voltage getting to one of the legs. It's really hard to get in there because of all the pots.
Yeah, totally.
So I might just send it off to them and say, sort that out, please. Might be the easiest way to do it.
Save your sanity.
How much do they charge?
Does it depend per module? Who knows? Give me a sec. 55 euros, and that includes the return postage worldwide. It's not terrible.
Okay, that's not terrible. I just have to figure out how much it costs. And where are they? Germany.
I think they're Spain.
Spain? Yeah, Bifaco, it does make sense.
Ooh.
What's up?
That's the EU price.
Okay.
It's $102.85 for non-EU people like us now.
Oh.
Yeah. I know. God damn! Oh, well.
Oh, dear. Oh, well. Maybe I won't.
Frustrations. Let's move on before we get too bitter about it. After Later Audio have a couple of things. Let's do a quick one. They are re-releasing some of the classic mutable stuff in full size and with the same coloured knobs as the originals, which is kind of cool. Maybe some tweaks to the firmware, but if you want the original ergonomics and all that, there are some options, given the open source nature and the unfortunate departure of mutable instruments. We always knew there'd be a reliable source somewhere to get these if you wanted them. Now, more interesting from Afterlater, they have a complex oscillator. Lots of people have complex oscillators, you say. Not like this, they don't. This is a series of 4 modules that can be, actually there might be 5 of them, anyway, bought and used separately, but connected at the back to form a big complex oscillator that's kind of customizable. It's super cool. So you have Cascades, which is kind of your more full-featured oscillator section. You have Canyon, which I believe is the main intermingling kind of corner of the series. Valley, which includes your wave folders and harmonic situation, and then you have Brooks, which is the smaller sort of sub-oscillator to be used as a modulator. But of course you can buy these in many combinations and configurations and individually, and of course you can break them out depending on what your rack is doing at the time. Let me read you their bump, shall I? This is the Coco series, by the way. With the Coco series, the aim is to bring all the goodness of a complex oscillator while aiming to minimize some of the downsides. The main thing that I appreciate about complex oscillators is that you can have a lot of fun without having to patch too much. By default, you can get some very deep sounds that go far beyond the standard bleep and bloop. On the downside, complex oscillators are big and have a fixed set of capabilities, not to mention they're also quite expensive. The Coco series allows you to choose your oscillator features and choose your control module and connect them all into a single complex oscillator. You can then break them down, and each module also works as a standalone module well. So when you need that extra oscillator for your performance case, you can break the system down and use it accordingly. So you can have up to three oscillators. They say at least two, because of course it isn't a complex oscillator without at least two. So they said one Cascades and two Brooks would be cool, Brooks being the little one. So you've got your usual FM, sync, and mod waves that you can use. These will all be connected around the back via ribbon cables. So they're through zero oscillators, of course, as mentioned earlier. Okay, so the control module Valley adds upper harmonics, and Canyon adds lower harmonics. That was the differentiation between them. Yes, Valley is the wave folder there. But it's pretty cool. It gives you the option to build up your complex oscillator slowly, rather than saving up 400, 500 quid in one go and having a giant HP chunk taken out. That's a cool thing. After Later Audio, Coco System, if you're interested. Can I hook up to the Two Bluth? That was exciting. This might be using it as a sound source. So, Qubit Electronics. Have you got something Qubit? I feel like you've got something Qubit going on in your system somewhere. Or did you? Or
were you? I was going to get a Surface.
Ah, the physical modelling boyo. Yes. But you didn't.
No.
Ah, yes, I remember it well. The debate. Anyway.
I still might get one, but I've kind of gone off the boil with Eurek at the moment.
Gotcha. Right. After Aurora, which was the squishy, splooshy Reverbitron that they did a while ago, they've just come out with a delay called Nautilus. On their website, it says, "We're going to need a bigger boat," because they describe it as an oceanic delay. As with the other ones, and you can see by the USB port, these are open source to some degree, so you can write your own algorithms, firmware. I'm not sure, because frankly, that kind of stuff is beyond me, but I do really like the stuff that Qubit is doing, keeping it nice and open and more flexible, giving you a bit more interest with your modules after you might find the limits, potentially. Super cool stuff. See what you think. Okay, so you've got low-pass and high-pass filters in there. There is a bit crush kind of corner of the world. You've got lo-fi effects, sample reduction, that kind of stuff. Saturation, there's a wave folder in there. Never thought I'd see that in a delay. That's kind of cool. As well as a more classic distortion for you. Stereo, of course, because why would you not want a stereo delay? Of course, normal feedback paths, stereo, cascade, and an adrift. Interesting. What's adrift? Cascading and ping pong feedback concoction. It goes places, according to Qubit. But yes, of course, you have shimmer type options and your usual delay stuff. Sounds powerful, and if you like Qubit, go and have a look. Right, let's move on to some software, but loosely related to Eurorack. Very related to Eurorack, in fact. Noise Engineering have just released a plugin bundle number 2. This includes Manis Iteritas, my favourite of their voices, Loquelic Verior, and Imitor. Super cool. I do kind of want to check these out. I think it's like $49 for just Manis on its own. That's quite tempting. Although, for me, the fun of Manis Iteritas was just grabbing the controls and kind of going mad and jamming on it, which is not really the case with a plugin unless you faff around getting a MIDI controller hooked up and parameterized and all that kind of stuff. But it is a cool sound, so thoroughly recommended. And of course, they're digital modules anyway, so they'll sound identical. Just if you wanted to know. Right. If you have a ludicrous amount of money to throw away, the Moog Model 10 modular synthesizer is back in production, because it was a limited thing that they did in 2019. So what are they doing with this one? I think it's kind of a built-to-order situation here. So this system is 2.5 rows, I think. I'm not really sure what they call it in Moog modular land. I'm going to give you the modules, Pete, and our usual game of try and figure out how much they're charging for this bad boy. Improved calibration this time around, apparently. Yeah, built to order. That's what I thought. Right, let me zoom in on this picture. Okay, here we go. A random signal generator, which is actually just white and pink noise. The classic fixed filter bank, voltage controlled low pass filter, 904A, envelope generator, times two, a VCA, a VCO 901, two VCOs 901B, the oscillator controller, and then the smaller modules at the bottom. You have a mixer, a reversible attenuator, maybe that's what they call an attenuverter, I don't really know. Controller outputs, I don't know what those are either. Trunk lines, maybe those are for connecting multiple cases, and the power switch. Let me show you the picture, of course. Looks like that.
Mm-hmm.
So not massive. Place your bets. We're working in dollars today.
$10,000.
Ooh, it's quite close, but it's higher.
Well, then I'm going to have to say 12.
Bang on the cash. $12,000 for bragging rights. Let's be honest, that's all it is. Interesting move, given their price rises and possible struggles behind the scenes.
What, releasing that again?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they've got to design it. They already had them released before. They were $10,000 when they were...
Yes.
Did you say 2018?
2019 it was, apparently.
And didn't they do several others? I'm getting confused because there's also the Model 15.
Yeah, I think...
It's in the Model 35 and the Model 65.
Yeah, I think this was released on its own, 2019-ish, and then before that, they had the selection with some larger systems available. Probably another built-to-order situation.
Yeah, they're just beyond comprehension, those sort of prices.
Yeah. I don't know why. But I suppose, yeah, you're right. They've got the schematics, and if it's built-to-order, they don't have to worry about holding stock. So assuming some weirdo buys one, a nice lump of cash for them.
I still think they possibly are missing a trick by not selling their modules separately.
Yeah, good point, because I assume they would be compatible with other... Is it 4U or is it 5U?
5U.
5U.
So with your synthesizer.com, your Club of Knobs, your Moon Modular, they're all...
I'm glad
fully,
you know the brands. I have no idea.
All fully compatible.
Yeah.
So if you can build your own case, you can build a 5U system... Certainly way cheaper than Moog will sell you one from one of the other manufacturers.
Or go 4U and you still got the quarter-inch jacks.
Yeah, I suppose.
But obviously not compatible. Anyway, we'll possibly never figure out what the big deal is with that. Lastly, another software. There is an open-source sampling doobery released by Aphex Twin with... Dave Griffiths.
I saw this. I saw the statement from Aphex Twin about the project and how long they've been working on it for quite some time.
Ooh, how long is quite some time? I didn't see that.
Well, initially he said that he was inspired when Shazam was released.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that's been cooking a while. It's a really cool premise. Let me read the thing. What if you could reconstruct source audio from a selection of other MP3s and audio on your computer? What if you could build a 303 riff from only acapellas or bubbling mud sounds? What if you could sing a silly tune and rebuild it from classical music files? You can do this with Sample Brain. And open source. So it's probably...
Yeah, it's free.
Go mad. Why not? All you have to do is try and figure out how GitHub works, which often confuses me. But yeah, if you can negotiate that, it's free.
I don't have too much of a problem because invariably a lot of the modular kits that you get point to GitHub for various...
BOM bits. Schematics and
all
that.
Yeah, exactly.
My struggle is not really navigating it. It's finding the download button.
Yeah, sometimes it's a bit obtruse.
It's a little bit confusing. Anyway, Sample Brain, go find it. I really want to have a go with this one. I was going to try and get some of that done today to bring an example in, but alas, I don't actually have much audio just kicking around on my computer to mess with, unfortunately. But yeah, there we are. You know what that means. It means it's time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, or what Pete's found on YouTube this week. Take it away while I figure out what I've been doing.
Anyway, I found a completely new category of YouTube video that I hadn't come across before. And that is of various people demonstrating and instructing you on how conjuring tricks are actually done.
I thought, I have no idea how true it is, that there was some kind of magician's cult or association where you kind of became part of this weird magician's circle and you were then never allowed to reveal your tricks.
In fact, it's called the Magic Circle.
Is it actually called the Magic Circle?
Yeah.
They've obviously got a bit of a rebellion on their hands then.
Well, the internet's just trashed all that, yeah. Isn't it? Information is free. So, yeah. Yes, this particular one is simply named Oscar Owen, who is clearly the name of the gentleman. And he's relatively young, but seems to be very skilled in the art of sleight of hand. And is only too happy to reveal exactly how the tricks are performed and gives lots of advice on technique as well. So if you want to learn about those particular coin vanishing card tricks, you know, the whole gamut of the type of close-up magic stuff with the hand skills, This seemed to be a very good channel for that type of information. So that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel entitled Oscar Owen.
Wonderful stuff. Pete, you know that category of video that we talk about all the time, which is those artisans doing their one thing with unlimited skill and it being incredibly satisfying to watch?
Yes.
There is a YouTube channel that does seem to collect this kind of thing, or there's probably more, but there's a genre name for it. So I'm not going to recommend anything specific, but unintentional ASMR is the thing.
Unintentional?
Yeah, so normally you'd think that's just kind of the sounds or the softly spoken, and it's not always about the quality of voice or the sounds in this one. A lot of the time it ends up being these really high-level craftsmen gently imparting their knowledge and demonstrating what they do. So if you have a yearning to be calmed down by somebody making a really fine fountain pen, just for example, and a lot of the time they are Japanese, which is brilliant, lots of excellent Japanese craftsmen on YouTube, search unintentional ASMR, and maybe an extra word or two for if you have a particular hankering for teapots or woodworking, for example, that'll probably do it. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours. Find us on the internet. We're there. Talk to us, please. We're lonely.